Thanks for joining us on this week's episode, where we finish our discussion of the Best Picture nominees from the 8th Academy Awards.
I'm Maddie.
And I'm Kelsey.
Let's find out if the Oscars got it wrong.
All right.
Finally.
Emmys, finals, 1935, we're doing it. This is such a funny year to do a 16-picture bracket because so many of them were like, it's pretty structurally, pacing-wise, flawed, but it's really good.
Honestly, I felt like this wasn't the most amazing collection of movies we've ever had, but there was like a lot of parody where almost all of the movies, I was like, there's some good stuff, but there's also some problems. That's most of the movies.
Right. So a competitive tournament.
It really is. It really is.
All right. I guess we should just dive right into our semis.
The final four.
Woo woo. Mm-hmm. Okay. First matchup is our number one seed, Top Hat, a mistaken identity rom-com with dancing. It stars Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, and Edward Everett Horton. Directed by Mark Sandrich. Written by Alan Scott and Dwight Taylor, was nominated for 4, and it won 0.
And we have our 13 seed, Broadway Melody of 1936, a comedy about an ingenue trying to get a role with a Broadway producer who's also her high school sweetheart. It stars Eleanor Powell, Jack Benny, and Robert Taylor, directed by Roy Del Ruth and written by Harry W. Kahn, Moss Hart, Jack McGowan, and Sid Silvers. It was nominated for 3, and it won 1. Best dance direction.
Dance off. Okay.
One.
Ready? One.
Two. Three.
Three.
Top hat. Excellent.
All right.
One down.
And then our next matchup, our next semi, is our number 15 seed, Black Fury, a drama about a man who gets caught up in a union busting scheme. It stars Paul Muni, Karen Morley, and William Gargan. It's directed by Michael Curtis. Written by Aben Finkel and Carl Erickson. It's nominated for 1, and it won 0.
And we have our 14 seed, Les Miserables, an adaptation of the Victor Hugo novel. It stars Frederick March and Charles Laughton. Directed by Richard Boleslavsky, written by W.P. Lipscomb. It was nominated for 4, and it won 0.
Great matchup, 14 versus 15.
It really is. We have the 13, 14, and 15 seeds in our final four. If this happened in March Madness, people would lose their minds.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Ready?
One. Two. Three.
Three.
Les Miserables. Okay.
Okay.
Good.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So we should talk about the losers of our semis, Broadway Melody of 1936 and Black Fury. So start with Broadway Melody of 1936.
Sure.
Okay, I will summarize this one.
Okay.
Or do you want to, since you rewatched the ending?
I did rewatch the ending. It's fine with me. I could do it either way.
Okay. So Broadway Melody of 1936 is about a young woman who comes to the big city with dreams of making it big. And her in is going to be that her high school sweetheart is now a big Broadway producer. So when she first comes to town, he doesn't recognize her, and it really hurts her feelings. And I guess we should say that meanwhile, he's trying to put on a new production with backing from this very wealthy woman and he doesn't have a lead for yet. So he really needs a lead woman. And she's threatening that if he can't find a lead, he's going to have to put her in the play as the lead, and he doesn't want to do that.
No.
So he doesn't recognize his old friend. She leaves, but later his secretary is like, yeah, your old friend came to visit. And he's like, she did? Where is she? And the secretary's like, I don't know. And he's like, figure it out. Also, meanwhile, he's being bedeviled by these tabloid journalists who keep writing nasty stories about him and the rich woman, which are kind of true. And he keeps going down and socking the tabloid guy in the face, thinking that'll stop him from writing stories, and it doesn't.
Mm-mm.
And so eventually he connects with the young woman. They're able to find her, And he's like, it's so great to see you, but you really shouldn't try to make it into Broadway. It's a terrible situation. I don't think you're built for it. You should just go home. Like, it's not worth it. It's going to mess you up. And she's like, what? Come on, give me a shot. She's also befriended these two other performers who they all go down to see him, and they are a brother and sister duo that get put in the show and they feel bad about it. And she's like, it's fine, whatever. And so eventually he's like, you just go home. I'll pay for you to go home and I'll come visit later. Then he buys her a train ticket. And he thinks she leaves, but she's befriended his secretary and they decide that they're going to figure out how to get her into the show. So she doesn't leave. Meanwhile, the tabloid has made up this French woman dancer who's in town and is like super incredible. So he's trying to get her to be in the show, but she doesn't really exist. And so then the ingenue pretends to be the French woman to get into the show, but then a real French dancer with that name exists and threatens to sue the tabloid, so they're gonna, you know, blow her up and say, oh, they're gonna tell the guy like she doesn't really exist. But the ingenue convinces the tabloid not to do that, and at the end they go to a party and she dances for him and he's like, oh, it's you, be in my show, and also I'm in love with you. And that's the ending?
Kind of, yeah.
We had a conversation yesterday where we were both like, this is again another one we both watched a while ago, I think. And we were like, how did it end?
Well, the reason we couldn't remember, I went and rewatched it, is because it doesn't really end. The ending is she shows up as herself at the party. He's like, what are you doing here? And she's like, don't worry about it. I'm on a date with someone else. And then she does a 10-minute dance sequence. And then the journalist calls to report a story that these two are going to get married after she stars in his play. And I'm going to be the best man. And then you see the leads together in the green room and they are going to kiss. But then there's a bunch of people watching them, and so he pulls a plant in front of him and then they kiss, presumably, and that's the end. They never talk about like, I will hire you for my play, or I'm sorry I impersonated that French woman. Like, none of none of that happens. This was a funny little movie. I mean, there's like so much dancing in it, more dancing than you would need, I think, but it's giving you what it promises. You want to see these Broadway people perform stuff? That's what you're going to get in this movie. The plot is obviously a little thin, but I think it works. The hijinks of the French actress work, even though at the end they don't really clear up how it resolves. And I actually liked how weird parts of this movie were. There's this running joke with this guy who's job is impersonating snores, and he shows up 3 times and you're like, why do we keep seeing this guy impersonate the snores? But the end beat of the movie is they bring the guy back as a like rule of three, the snore guy is still around. Like, that's bizarre.
I think they thought it was going to crush, like everyone's gonna be like, this snore guy is so hilarious. And for me it was a bit that didn't quite work, so it just kept going on and on.
I mean, I won't say that I like loved the snore bit in itself, but the fact that they kept hammering the snore bit, I found fascinating. I really liked Buddy Ebsen plays the neighbor and who's the brother of the sister dancing team, and he's just like so goofy. I love their tap dance.
His performance was really something else.
He's great. I love when they dance for their breakfast and when she first meets them, and he just has this like really weird dance style, and I was like, who is this guy? He's so familiar. And I looked it up and I was like, oh yeah, it's Buddy Ebsen. I liked the reporter who's Jack Benny. He's funny. And then he has his underling guy, and I liked the running story with the main producer's assistant and her relationship mm-hmm. with the underling who they keep meeting, and she keeps like trying to get his help, and then of course he's like keeps messing stuff up and telling things he's not supposed to tell and all of that. And there was also just that weird, like, there were just moments where I was like, that's so bizarre. There's a moment where the underling, I think his name is like Scoop or Snoop or something like that, and he can't figure out how to dunk his donut, and the journalist is telling him how to dunk his donut. There were just these moments where I was like, whoever wrote this is strange. It's a strange person. But for the most part, I thought it was just like, fine. It delivered on what it was going to be. The dancing was impressive.
Yeah. But
there was just like so much dancing and not much story.
The story is thin. It is a vehicle for dancing. And as a person who loves tap dancing, I was like, this is fine. I mean, I like watching the dancing. I thought Eleanor Powell, who is the lead in this, was very talented. She's not someone who I think I've seen before, and I was not aware of her. But I thought, in particular, like, she was incredible. And obviously, Buddy Ebsen's great, too, and I'm going to play his sister. So, you know, if you like tap dancing, it's pretty, I mean, it's a good way to watch some tap dancing.
I like tap dancing. I mean, there's a reason two tap dance forward movies have made it into our final four.
It's true. It's true. And yeah, the story doesn't really resolve, which is a little confusing. And the guy is a jerk.
Yeah, that's the main issue, is that the guy sucks.
Like, we're supposed to like him and be invested in their love story. And there's no real evidence for what he's saying to her about what her life is going to be.
Well, first of all, there's no way that he is older than 25, and he is the hottest Broadway producer in town.
Which seems like it would indicate that Broadway success is actually quite easy, because he comes from some small town. It's not like they're from the city and he has connections.
It didn't seem like he was, like, started super wealthy either. He just is, like, a smash success Broadway producer. And for some reason, she comes and he's like, it ruins lives. It's like, it doesn't seem like it. You seem fine.
Yeah. And also, if she works with you, why would you ruin her life?
Exactly. Like, isn't the point that it's very hard? You have to audition and everyone tells you no. And it's very, like, it's grueling. But you could, I think the issue is, he doesn't want to have her audition for him because he doesn't want to have to say no to her, which is, like, totally understandable situation, right? Like, that is a thing where you're like, I get this. Like, he doesn't know how good she is. And if she auditions, he's going to feel like he needs to give her a role. And that's just going to be, like, really awkward. So you kind of get where he's coming from. But it goes to this extreme where he decides, like, you're not going to do this. I won't let you. I'm putting you on a train back home. And you're like, what the fuck?
You're not in charge. And I agree. When she agrees, you're like, no. And then when you find out she's not really leaving, you're like, yes.
Yeah, because at first she's like, okay, well, if you think that's best. She gets on a train and you're like, wow, that sucked. I hated every moment of that. But instead, she's scheming with the secretary and you're like, yeah, I love this. I liked all the minor characters. The main guy sucked.
No, didn't love him. And then we also need to file this in our list of movies where you can just punch people.
In the 30s, there are no repercussions for going around town punching everyone. Good to know.
So times have changed. I don't know when punching became assault, but sometime past 1939, at least.
Definitely. So, yeah.
Maybe you could just punch journalists. A lot of punching of journalists.
But he punches some non-journalists in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, doesn't he? Or are they all journalists?
No, they're all journalists. I think Mr. Deeds might punch some non-journalists.
Yeah, Deeds punches all kinds of people. Deeds is like out of control.
So yeah, again, this is our third movie from this year that is very difficult to find. I don't know that you need to find it.
I don't think you do either.
If you like tap dancing, it's good.
Yeah, but we're going to talk later this episode about a different tap dancing movie that's much easier to find. And I think you could just watch that instead.
You could watch that instead. Although, again, I think Eleanor Powell is
a very
impressive dancer. But there may be other of her movies that are easier to find and more coherent.
Yeah, there's that. Well, she also went on to star in two successive Broadway Melody movies, I believe. So maybe those are easier to find as well. I don't know.
All right. Broadway Melody. Brings us to our next semi-loser, Black Fury.
Black Fury. It's a union movie. I love a union movie. Mm-hmm. And it's Muni. So how could you go wrong?
Love Muni.
Okay. So this is about a bunch of people who live in a coal mining town. Coal town. Mm-hmm. As it would be called. And so there's like a recent union where they work that has been, you know, making some strides. Their working conditions are better than they used to be, but there's a little bit of some sort of discontent where people are like, yeah, we have an agreement with them and things are better, but maybe they could be even better than they are. And so our main character is Paul Muni, who he's an immigrant. He's in love with this woman from the town. He envisions that they're going to get married and he has money to buy a farm. And he's like planning out their whole lives. They're going to be so great. Everything's going to be wonderful. Unbeknownst to him, she's having an affair with this cop guy who works for the, there's like this mercenary cop force that is a real thing that I don't know if people know about, but like, it was pretty bad. There were these
private police for these coal towns.
So she's having an affair with this guy and he like, I'm going to get promoted and leave town. And she's like, you should take me with you because if you don't, I'm going to end up stuck here and married to this guy that I don't want to marry. And it's going to be horrible. So she leaves. She runs off with the cop. And boy, does this ruin Paul Muni's life. He's really thrown for a loop. He can't believe that she left and all of his plans are for naught. He was buying this farm. Everything was going to be great.
He had $78 saved.
He'd been saving his money. He had the down payment for the farm. He was buying the farm. He made a deal to keep the pigs. Like everything was going to be great. And so this breaks his heart and he basically goes on a bender. He doesn't know how to deal with it. And his friends have been trying to get him to come to this union meeting because there's some guy who wants to talk about, like, changing the union or something. And he's like, I don't really care about union stuff, guys. Like, I'm just living my life, trying to
marry Anna
and have my great life. And so everything falls apart. He's super drunk. He ends up at the union meeting, where he probably shouldn't be, very drunk. And there is a guy who's at this union meeting who's trying to like stir discontent. There's a guy from the union headquarters who's there being like, I understand why you guys are upset, but like, here's what we've done. Here are the strides we've made. We have this agreement with them. We have to fulfill our agreement with them so that they can't claim that we are in breach of contract, like laying it all out for them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, when we have another contract renewal, we'll try to get more things. But like, this is the nature of unions, right?
Yes.
And so then there's a guy who's like, he's lying to you. We're all paying these union dues and they're living fat off the hog and we have these horrible conditions. And he's trying to like get people to be upset about the union. And into this situation walks Paul Muni, who is drunk and upset and is like, everyone's a liar and everyone's out to get you. And he just starts yelling in the crowd, like, they're trying to screw you. Everyone's trying to screw you. And he ends up accidentally riling up the crowd. And so then people get on board with the anti-union sentiment. Then we find out that this guy who was riling up the crowd is actually paid by this group of outsider, like, racketeers who basically come into Union Bust and offer to the company, like, we can break up your union and then we have a bunch of workers who will come in as scabs and work for you. And like, it's a whole arrangement. And so he's like calling his boss saying, you'll never believe this, but this random guy is gonna be like, I'm gonna pin everything on him and pretend that he was running this the whole time. And so there's a huge rift, right? Like the town breaks into two units, those that want to strike, those that don't want to strike. But unfortunately, like, once some of them want to strike, they all have to strike because it's a union. And so the company is like, you guys are in breach of your contract. They bring in a bunch of scab workers and the whole town is suffering because nobody's making any money and they're all getting kicked out of their houses. And it's really, really bad. And everyone is blaming Paul Muni, who only kind of understands what has happened.
He's maybe not like the brightest person when he's sober either. Yeah.
I mean, he's not very political. He hasn't put a lot of deep thought into how all of this works. And he just like, he likes that they have elected him head of their group. And he's like, oh, wow, everybody respects me now. But then it like all comes to a head when everyone in town now hates him. And his best friend, who he's been living with, kicks him out of the house because the best friend was a higher up in the union. And so it's like very sad. there's a friend breakup.
You have to say goodbye to that dog.
Yeah. And so now he's like out on his own. And the guy that was orchestrating everything leaves town. And his friend he's like walking around the street one night. And he happens upon the rent-a-cops around the town and gets killed. He gets into a fight with these cops. And
they're harassing a woman.
Yeah. And one of the cops gets injured in the scuffle. And so then they're like, wow, screw this guy. And they kill him. And so now Muni's character is like, wow, everything is really bad. My friend has gotten killed. And he's like, starts to realize the weight of what's going on. Meanwhile, Anna has come back to town because things didn't work out with the cop, unsurprisingly. And so he's like, I have to fix this. Everything's gone wrong and it's all my fault. I need to do something because the union is about to give in and decide to go back to work, but it'll be under much worse conditions because they've just thrown out their old agreement. And so he decides, I will fix it. And what he does is he goes and steals all of the dynamite from the mine, and he goes into the mine and he rigs the whole thing up so that he can explode the whole mine. And he calls the boss of the company and he's like, if you don't agree to let them go back to work with the agreement in place, I'm just going to blow the whole mine up. And they don't believe he will, but oh, he's not bluffing. He starts blowing up parts of the mine. They try to break in. One cop guy gets through, but then he's just like trapped in there as his prisoner. And so luckily, like, he holds out long enough that finally they are able to get an agreement with the company to go back to work.
Well, there's pressure because the government finds out that this, like, private police company did all this work to break up.
Like, union busting, yeah.
Yeah, to break up the union. So the fact that they voided the agreement, the government's going to step in and be like, there was something else happening here. You have to reinstate the agreement.
Yes. And the company is completely blameless. They had no idea this was going on.
Is it the private police company the whole time?
And so anyway, yes, there's pressure from the outside. He's holding out long enough and they do manage to go back to the original agreement. And Anna comes down and tells him, like, you did it. You won. You can leave now. And he comes out and now he's hero. And the cop that he was keeping in there with him is the one who killed his friend. And so they arrest him, which is nice, too, because actually the real guy that got killed, they totally acquitted the cops that did it. But that's reality. And this is a movie.
It's a movie.
But anyway, the union wins. Yay!
Workers.
We love workers.
Yeah, it's another interesting Paul Muni social piece. I was reading on the Wikipedia that this had to be banned in some cities because it was causing social unrest.
Yes.
Which you love to
see. Love to see it. This is the movie that is, this and The Informer are the movies that are most affected by the code. I think you see the censorship around the edges of both of these movies in what they are able to say and what they can't say about their various topics.
The fact that the coal company is completely blameless is suspicious.
Suspicious.
But Paul's giving, I think, like a bigger than usual performance.
Mm-hmm. He's got a big accent.
He's got a big accent. And again, like, the character he's playing is quite boisterous, like, as a person, right?
Yeah.
And so that's interesting. It's a little bit different of a performance than I think we've seen from him.
He often plays like a pretty serious, contained character. And so this was a different vibe for him.
And the movie's interesting. The fact that it is a scheme, like when they start off and they're talking about their why they're maybe not totally happy with the union agreement, you get it.
Yeah.
Part of coal mining is doing all the prep work to be able to actually get the coal, but they're only paid for the coal that they actually produce every day.
Yeah.
So any amount of work they have to do to open up a new vein or lay tracks for the, you know, little rail cars, those are hours lost. And you're like, that's sucks.
Fucked. Yeah.
That's not so cool. Much labor to not get paid. And so, yeah, when this guy starts stirring up trouble, you get like, I get why you wouldn't be 100% happy with the agreement. But on the other hand, right, you understand the union representatives who are like, if we break this agreement, things are just going to go back to the beginning.
They don't have any reason to continue negotiating with us, right? We have to be like, present ourselves as people who are of our word. So they will agree to something with us and then we will follow through on it.
Yes, we appreciate that this is incremental and not 100% where we want to be, but there's no real other path forward, unfortunately. And the company will starve you, right? And so it is this labor, it's a very difficult thing. It's really, really hard. And then there, of course, is the other layer of, yes, this coal town, they have their own private police, and also it's a company town. So they own all of the houses, too. So when they start getting evicted from their houses, it's because they're not paying the company. Mm-hmm. Obviously, their mortgages or their rent.
I mean, company towns are so insidious because
they're
also
so crazy.
I don't know if they didn't really talk about this in this movie, but a lot of the time they wouldn't even pay them in real money. They'd pay them in like company bucks that could only be spent at company stores and on company things. And you're like,
it's really bad. It was really bad.
Yeah.
And so, and you feel bad for him once he gets embroiled in this because he very clearly is in over his head and he doesn't understand like what he's done or what's happening. He's a bit of a rube, but it's interesting along the way, but then once he gets embedded in that mine with the dynamite, it's so awesome. It really like kicks it into next gear.
It really
and you're like,
does.
Blow that shit up, Paul.
Yeah, you're totally rooting for him. And there's the scene when we talked about this earlier, the cop is there and he's brought in a bunch of food with himself because he knew he would be like in a siege. And so the cop's sitting there and he's like, I'm starving. And he's like, good. It's good for you to starve a bit.
That scene is so interesting because, he's sitting with the cop. The cop is handcuffed. I think they've been down there for days, so the cop hasn't eaten in days. Yeah. And he says he's eating like an apple and bread. He's like stuffing his face in front of this cop. And he goes, it's good for you to starve. And I thought there was going to be more to that scene, but it just cuts. It's just like, that's the statement.
That's the whole thing.
I think ideally, I would have liked to see a little bit more of how like the government figured out the racket was happening. Like in my ideal version of this movie, there's like a journalist character who sort of like figures it out as well. Or, you know, a sort of Rob Morrow and Quiz Show government investigator around the edges. But as it is, you know, it's got a lot to say. It's interesting. It's got our boy, Paul. There's some emotional moments. Like, when he tries to go back home and his friend has kicked him out of the house.
That's really sad. And the friend's wife has to be the one to tell him. And she's like, I really hope when all this is over, you'll be able to come back home. And you're like, I know. Me too.
But also, too, when Anna leaves, her parents come to Paul's house and they're like, she left this letter. And he's like, there's no way Anna left. I don't believe it. And they get a little girl, like the daughter of his friends, to read the letter.
The one who can read. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he can't read. And you're just like, oh,
it's sad. Buddy. Poor guy.
I can't believe Anna left you for this cop.
Yeah. And it's like, Anna's story is interesting too, because when she's talking to the cop at the beginning, she's like, you know, I guess I was in love with him at some point. And she definitely has like, we don't see what happens to her when she leaves, really. But it's like, you get what's going on. And she has a reckoning of like, wow, I should have stayed and married him. That seems like a much better life than what I've got going on here.
Because when she's talking to the cop about leaving with him, the cop's like, well, maybe don't leave with me right now. Like, I'll move up there and then maybe you can come later. And it's clear like he doesn't really care about her, but she's not picking that up at the moment.
Well, she's right that she's like, if you leave me here, you'll never send for me. I'm gonna end up stuck here. So I think in her mind, she's like, maybe he's not perfect, but at least I'll get out of this town. But it's it's not just the town that's making her feel, you know, like her life's not enough or whatever she's got going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Some of this stuff is left unsaid, but I feel like the pressures of like the constraints under which they were making the movie are what make that happen. I don't think they can really investigate how this happens, because then you have to get into like the company has to be involved. It doesn't make any sense for the company to be like, we're totally blameless. And they treat it like, you know, they treat it like it's the mom and pop business owner in a small town where the mafia is racketeering, right? And so someone shows up at their house and is like, you got to pay us for protection. Otherwise, something horrible could happen to your business. That's how they treat it. But it's like, this is not a mom and pop shop. This is a giant company that called in the Pinkertons to do this. This is not somebody who got ransomed for their company. So yeah, there's that where they're like, you can't attack the business. You can't attack capitalism. You have to just nibble around the edges and be like, there are these bad cop people, and it doesn't have anything to do with the lovely businessman.
Also, the cops are bad, so it's not like they shouldn't be blamed.
No, the cops are definitely bad. The cops are really bad. I mean, this story is based on a real guy who got murdered by some of these cops, and the way that he got murdered was way, way worse than how it happens in this movie. The fake cops were some villains. But it's just that the companies were also villains.
Yes.
Black Fury, another message movie from Paul Muni.
Paul.
He wants you to learn things and think about the world.
Yeah, and fight social injustice.
Hell yeah, man. Reform the prisons, reform the capitalism. He wants a lot of reform.
And I support him. Wash your hands.
The world still needs every piece of reform that Paul Muni was asking for in the 30s.
We are washing our hands more, though.
That's
to be fair.
That's so true.
Thankfully.
Thankfully. It's the only thing we succeeded at. Although that was like a long time before the 30s that they were asking for the hand washing. So it took some time.
Although people are still weird about vaccinations.
So true. That people need to watch that movie and learn that vaccinations are real.
Yeah. Paul just speaks to us.
He really does.
Okay. So those are our semis. And it brings us to our final. If memory serves, we usually talk about both movies first.
And then pick a winner. Because some, I feel like I'm always in a place where I'm like, I don't know what should win. So we got to talk about it and figure that out.
Want to start with Top Hat? Go back to our dancing?
Sure. Tell me about Top Hat.
Top Hat is a Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers piece. We start off with Fred Astaire is this famous dancer, performer, and a producer is bringing him in to try to get him to star in his show, I think. If this is another one I watched a while ago, so if I get something wrong, help me
That's
out.
That's correct. That's correct.
And while he's staying with his friend, he does a dance late at night.
Tap dancing in an apartment building in the middle of the night, or hotel, I guess.
Late at night. A hotel, yeah. And he wakes up his downstairs neighbor, because that would be hella annoying.
Yep.
And she complains. And, you know, it's love at first sight. He's like, wow, she's so beautiful. Oh, I'm so sorry I woke you up. We should hang out. Da, 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 da. And so he starts to pursue her. He's kind of like following her around. She's staying in the hotel with this guy who's her fashion designer. And she's like his muse,
yeah.
I think, is their relationship.
He just pays her to wear his clothes. And she walks around in society and wears his clothes. And people ask, where did you get what you're wearing? And she's like, check out this guy.
And Fred Astaire follows her to the park and they have a lovely, you know, romantic dance in a gazebo during the rain.
They improvise an incredible tap number and that's how they're soulmates.
Yes. Now they're in love. But there's a mix up where someone at the hotel tells her that he's actually his married friend. And so she thinks that he's married. And incidentally, he had been invited by the married friend's real wife to come down to Italy to meet someone who's going to end up being Ginger Rogers. Mm-hmm. But in the interim, she thinks he's married. And so she's like, I don't want anything to do with you. She originally had decided she wasn't going to go to Italy because she wanted to keep getting to know this guy. But now she leaves for Italy. And the show that he's in is a huge success. But he's like, I got to follow this girl. So he's like, I'll go to Italy for the weekend. We'll be back up. It'll all be good. Mm-hmm. And so they get down to Italy. And it's really quite spectacular how long they're able to string along.
It's so well constructed. I was amazed.
The mix up of the identities while they're all in this like same location, the husband, the wife, Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire. And so it gets to a point where she's so frustrated, she agrees to marry her fashion designer, who has also decided he obviously hates the married man who he thinks has been hitting on Ginger Rogers. And then also the wife finds out that the married man has been hitting on Ginger Rogers, which he has not been. So, you know, there's just mix up. And in the end, Fred Astaire is able to explain to her that he's not married. He's single. They love each other. She didn't actually get married to the fashion designer. So they're able to get married. Happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think?
I loved it. It was super fun. The hijinks and misunderstanding went on for like, I was amazed how long they carried it out. And it got funnier and funnier because the way they carry it out in Italy is that the wife keeps trying to set her up with Fred Astaire. So she's every time Fred Astaire's around, she's trying to like, how about this guy? Don't you like this guy? But she thinks that's her husband. And so then there's all this stuff where she's like, well, I guess if she's okay with it, because like in front of, they're all there and she's like, you should dance with him. You guys should dance together. She's like, well, does she want me to hook up with her husband? And he's there being like, wow, you always know what kind of woman I like to the wife. And she's like, what is this scenario? But she's really torn because she has this great chemistry with Fred Astaire, which is as if you improvise a tap number that good with someone, like you guys are probably supposed to be together. So she's like, I maybe it's fine. Like if the wife's okay with it, maybe it's cool. But she like can't wrap her head around it. It gets too weird. But I was like, I thought it was hilarious how much they used the wife being like, it's cool. It's cool. You guys should hook up. She's like, but no one ever says, but aren't you married? Or like, who are you to each other? They managed to never say each other's names and stuff. The dancing's obviously great. The two of them are incredible. And I really like, what's his face? the guy who plays the married friend. Edward Everett Horton, who went on to do like several more movies with Astaire and Rogers, but he's really funny, like third wheel to their comedy thing. Mm-hmm. And I like that they pay off the joke of his like valet. He pays him or tells him to follow her around because he's trying to investigate this woman. He's not sure about her. And the fact that he was following her around ends up being why she doesn't get married to the guy, because he's pretending to be the person that marries them. Yeah. And so then the end beat is like, don't worry, you're not married because I'm not a priest. And so they're like, oh, thank God.
He's worried that she's trying to create a scandal with Fred Astaire that will derail this show. Like if he gets caught with this, you know, gold digger.
Yeah, well, because he hears that she is like the kept woman of this guy, her designer, right? He's like, we hear that this woman, she stays in this apartment that's paid for by him, and he buys all her clothes and he does this and that. And they're like, that sounds very suspicious. That who, what is this woman's deal? So everyone's suspicious of each other in a great way, and it all, I thought it paid off super well. The dancing was good. I thought there was like basically just enough of it. I didn't feel like there was too much dancing, and the story worked. I thought it was tight, and the comedy beats were good and very successful. I was happy with it, and there was no blackface, which I was even happier about.
So here's the thing, right? When we watched Swing Time, which, again, some great dancing, some great comedy beats, not like a valueless movie, I said to you, it was wild to me that that's the one on the AFI Top 100 list when you have all these other Astaire and Rogers to choose from.
Yep.
And I don't think Swing Time is better than Top Hat, and it certainly has more blackface.
It really does. But I think the plotting is better in Top Hat. I felt like the stuff in Swing Time doesn't come together as well.
So all I'm saying is Top Hat should be on the AFI Top 100.
Couldn't
list.
Agree like, more.
There's no reason why it should be Swing Time instead of Top Hat. So let's stop honoring films with blackface. We don't have to, and it seems like we don't have to.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir here. I have no reason that Swing Time should be on the list. I just feel like people are in love with the idea of like, but we have to put these difficult films on to remember our history. And it's like, nah, we don't. We could put Top Hat on.
We could just do Top Hat. It's great. The dancing is great. The comedy works. They're great together. Yeah, I agree with you. I, like I said, it was amazing as they kept going along. I was like, when are they going to figure out who they keep?
Yeah, when they all show up together at dinner, when it's like the wife and Ginger and Fred, I was like, it has to come out in this scene. But then it was even funnier that she was like, no, you guys should dance together. And she keeps looking over at the wife, and the wife's like, like trying together to dance with him. It was great.
And that's when they do Dancing Cheek to Cheek, which I think is one of the more famous numbers from this movie. And Ginger Rogers is wearing this amazing feathered gown, and the way it moves.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Incredible. I mean, all the dancing's great. I thought the tap number in the gazebo when they fall in love, I was like, this is stunning. this is so good.
I mean, I also loved, we see one bit of the performance that Fred Astaire is supposed to be doing, that he's on stage, and there's this bit where he's like tap dancing the sound.
Yes, that was amazing.
Like,
he's like a machine gun tap dance. And I was like, this is incredible.
So cool. So cool. I also liked, so her fashion designer, I guess he's Italian, and he keeps telling her, we Bedini have a motto. For the woman, the kiss. For the man, the sword. And then it comes out over the course of the movie that his father, he got this motto from his father, and how, you know, they only will kill a man who like has betrayed you. And it's very heavily implied through the storyline that he's a bastard. Like, it's clear that his father killed his real father who slept with his mom. Great.
There's loved undertones. It. Yeah. For the man, the sword.
Sword. The woman, the kiss.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because the resolution of Swing Time is actually kind of similar, where the woman gets like upset and is like, well, I guess I'll just marry another guy then. And then luckily they end up like resolving and she doesn't have to marry the other guy. But at the end of Swing Time, I felt like a little unsure about how all of that played out. I didn't feel like everybody's like emotional arc came together in the right way. Whereas Top Hat, I was like, yes, get everything that's happening here. All of the beats happened at just the right time. And I totally was on board with everyone's decisions. So I just think it's really tight. It's a really good comedy, really good dancing. Mm-hmm. What's not to like?
Dear AFI, have you ever redo your list? Just
swap them out. Just swap them out.
It's easy peasy. Like, again, I agree. There should be an Astaire and Rogers on the list.
Yes.
But it doesn't have to be the blackface one.
No. In fact, I think we would be doing a favor to Fred Astaire's legacy if we just let people forget that that movie exists.
Yeah, it would be better for him, too.
Okay.
Good times. Liked it.
Big fan. Love Top Hat.
Okay. That brings us to our last picture.
The Miserables.
Les Miserables. Tell me about
it. So miserable. People will likely know this story from the musical, but this is not a musical. It is just based on the
Or if you've listened novel. To all of our episodes when we covered Les Miserables for 2012 or whatever year that was.
And interestingly, which I don't think I knew, the adaptation into a musical, pretty one for one. All of the events very similar in this. So you will likely know most of the story, but in the broad strokes, we have this poor French man who steals a loaf of bread to feed his family and gets sentenced to 10 years in a hard labor camp prison, which feels like a bit much, but there he goes. He goes into the prison. He serves his 10 years. And there's a prison guard guy there watching him the whole time who, you know, remarks upon how strong he is, which is important later. And he gets out. He served his time. But because at some point he had tried to escape or something like that, they give him a yellow passport, which means, like, you don't want none of this guy. He's a bad criminal. And so he is released, but the release conditions are insane for the parole. He's supposed to travel with no means of traveling hundreds of miles away to report for his parole. And you have to report to your parole officer, you know, like once a week for the first year and once a month for the second year and like blah, blah, blah. Like very exacting parole conditions. And so he is having a really hard time. He can't get any work. It's hard to travel. He gets taken in by this lovely priest guy who is just like loves his fellow man and believes in giving people second chances. And so he stays with this guy, but he really needs money to continue his journey. So he ends up stealing the silver that they have. And he doesn't make it very far because he's like this hobo with a sack full of silver, and the cops find him and bring him back here. And the priest is like, why have you arrested him? I gave him that silver as a gift. In fact, he actually forgot to take these silver candlesticks with him as well. And so this simple act of kindness inspires him to change his life. And he abandons his old persona because he was getting nowhere with that one. He invents a new person and he becomes an upstanding member of society. He starts a new business. It's very successful. People in the town love him and they want him to be like mayor. He's fully turned his life around. And then a woman that used to work for him, she gets fired unbeknownst to him and she's very sick. The daughter needs to be taken care of and it falls to him because this woman dies. And so he adopts her daughter. And then some years pass, she grows up. The girl falls in love with this student rabble-rouser boy. And so then he thinks he's been seen because Javert, the cop, gets hired to work under him in this town. Coincidence of coincidences. And so he gets nervous that they're going to need to leave, but he doesn't recognize him. Then someone else gets arrested for his crimes. They think they have found him. But it's some other guy who's going to have to go to prison and take his sentence. And, you know, he's not sure he can stand for that. So he goes to the court and he won't let them put him in jail. He declares, I'm actually the one you're looking for, not this guy. And I will go to jail, but like I have some other stuff I need to take care of first. And so he goes back to his home. There's a student revolution happening.
You've mixed stuff up.
What have I mixed up?
So the stuff where he goes to the court is before the girl grows up.
Okay. And then they run away.
Yeah. So he's mayor. Javert has come to town to work under him. He sees him lift something heavy and is like,
I've only ever seen one strong man. Yeah.
There's only one man who could be strong.
Yeah.
And he has taken in the daughter and the mom is sick. He's taken in Cosette. And he hears about this guy who's been caught as Jean Valjean. Javert thought it was him, but then they caught another guy. And he goes, he's originally not going to go and say, no, I'm Jean Valjean. But then he, you know, sees the silver candlesticks and is like, oh, no, I got to turn myself in. And so he goes and he says it was him and he proves that it was him. And he's like, I'm going to go home and I'll report to prison. But before I do that, I'm going to give a bunch of money to the mom so she can take care of this little girl.
Yeah.
But then Javert shows up and he's like, you can't give her that money. Everything you own is going to be held by the state until we figure out, you know, how you got this money. And he's like, well, can't do that. So he takes the daughter. They run off. They end up living at a convent that he had been giving money to for years under a different assumed name. And she grows up in the convent. And he works as a gardener. And then when she's an adult, they leave and move to Paris. Mm-hmm. And that's when she falls in love with
the student.
Yes, the student.
And then, as you'll recall, revolution stuff is happening. And the girl is in love with him. He wants to flee with the girl to England because Javert is on their trail again. And she doesn't want to go because now she's in love with this boy. And so she is, I think, gonna agree to go. But then stuff happens where he ends up needing to save the boy. The girl who's the other girl who's in love with him comes and is like, he's in trouble. You have to save him. And so he goes to save him. He does. He rescues him from the street. And then in the course of it, realizes he's gonna have to turn himself in. Like, he sends the girl, he's like, you guys will be fine, we'll separate, but I'll meet you in England and it's all gonna be good. And then he goes out to turn himself into Javert, who they've had like their back and forth, Javert can't believe that he's actually a good person thing. And then Javert is not there to arrest him because he was too thrown by the fact that this guy is a good person, even though he's a criminal, and he kills himself.
Yeah.
It's a sad life for Javert.
Too strict, man.
It's too strict. That's too much to live by. You know, you can't hold yourself to standards like that. Then your whole moral worldview crumbles when you meet one nice criminal.
That's tough. Yeah, they introduced Javert, and I'm sure, I can't remember if this was in the musical, I'm sure obviously it's in the book, that he was born in a prison. His parents, or at least his father, was a criminal, and so he was like, I vowed that I would never be like them. I was going to follow the law, and I'm going to uphold the law.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's too much.
It's too much, my guy. You need a little flexibility. Yeah. But he doesn't. He has none. No flexibility at all.
So he snaps at the end, right? He breaks. There's no bend.
I understand. He's now has these two completely conflicting things in his mind, and he can't contain them both. And so he's like, I will no longer be living. I can't live with this.
Gotta check out.
I can't live with this. So yeah, that's Les Mis. What did you think of it?
I thought it was good. I mean, it's a solid story. It is a solid story that unfortunately still speaks to our times, as all things do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We still have people, you know, pay for their crimes, do their debt to society in prison, and then we let them out of prison and we're like, you can't vote.
Yeah.
You're like, what? And you can't get a job.
You can't vote, you can't get a job, you can't do anything because you're a felon. And everyone's like, but I paid my debt to society. It's like, sorry, buddy, you'll be paying that debt for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Penalties are too harsh for what you did, probably, to start with.
Mm-hmm. 10 years for stealing a loaf of bread, yeah.
To feed his starving sister and her children a small loaf of bread. And they're like, 10 years for you, buddy. I did love in the opening scene. It was so overt. He's like framed next to this huge Jesus. And you're just like, I get it.
Symbolism.
And then, you know, obviously you don't have the songs from the musical and you can feel different ways about that. But the story is solid. It's a solid story. And I thought Lawton was good as Javert. This is actually sort of what you thought Bly might be, and it wasn't.
No. This is a guy with like a really strong moral compass.
Yes. And you know, I thought Frederick was also really good as Valjean. He also plays the guy who they think is Valjean, and it's a very different performance of this sort of vagabond character who was like, I don't know what's going on. I don't even have a name. Like, no one named me. I've just been homeless my whole life, kicking around.
I'm just a guy, man. I don't think I was this guy in prison.
I liked his performance in that small part in that role. It's solid stuff. It's good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of the musical, and I don't feel like the music is missing because the story's great. I don't think that what I learned is the music is not what's carrying you through the musical of Les Mis. It's a great story. It's solid. Mm-hmm. The characters are really interesting, and you get the moral quandary of Javert. I think his suicide makes sense in both cases, and Lawton's great, and Frederick March is great, and it's like, this whole system is fucked up, man. You totally understand why everyone does what they do. Him having to create a new identity totally makes sense to you, because it's like, how is he supposed to live in this world with this yellow passport? And I don't know how, like, well, I couldn't believe that they were like, you need to report for parole 300 miles away next week. And it's like, how's he supposed to get there?
Yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't have a car. They don't exist. He doesn't have money. He can't get horses. He can't get on a, like, what?
There's no trains even.
There's no trains. He was having to do the David Copperfield walk across the country. So yeah, I think it's very compelling. And this particular adaptation, I thought, was really good. All the performances stand up, and the base storyline is very good.
And he's just haunted by Javert. He's just showing up. It's like, God,
and yeah, they keep falling into each other's paths in this way where you're like, they're fated to be around each other, right? They couldn't just move on their own separate ways. But Javert had to learn that the way he viewed the world was broken.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, he was just going to keep doing horrible things to people that probably didn't deserve it, right?
That's true. There's a comedy beat that I really love in this movie where when they approach Monsieur Madeleine, Frederick March, to be the mayor, the current mayor is there with, like, I don't know, some bigwig in the town. Frederick March is like, I don't really want to be mayor. I don't need to do that. Maybe he could serve another term. And the mayor's like, oh, yeah, I could serve another year. And the guy's like, no. No.
That was hilarious.
We're done with you.
I just love the idea of they're like, this is a businessman in town that we like. And so they just show up at his business and are like, you're the mayor now. He's like, I don't really want to be mayor.
Do that.
They're like, too bad. And the way they convince him is they go to his employees who are currently on the clock and are like, we want him to be the new mayor. Do you guys agree? And they're all like, yeah. That's how they decide. That's not a coerced cheer at all.
I mean, he is a good guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I just think it's very funny to be like, that they clearly want you to be the mayor. Let's go ask all of the people you employ. Like, they're all gonna be working at their stations like, nah, not a big fan.
Hate that guy.
This guy's
strong too.
Yeah, he's strong in the exact same way because he uses his back to lift something up.
Yeah.
And he's like, the only way your back could be that strong is if you'd worked for 10 years on, what are they even doing in this prison?
They're rowing boats.
Yeah, but like, where?
I don't know.
Yeah.
In the 2012 musical, they're building boats, right?
I think so. But yeah, he's like, you could only be that strong in that particular way if you had been a prisoner. No rich man is that strong, which, I mean, honestly, kind of fair. Like, why would a rich man be that strong?
Maybe you should just be like, I work out, man. I got a real intense fitness regimen.
People didn't work out then, though. That wasn't a thing.
I'm out lifting tires.
I know you've never heard of this, but I do CrossFit.
Yeah.
I really loved his goodbye speech to Cosette when he's telling her they're gonna meet up again, but he's clearly lying. Sad. That scene made me cry. That was really well done. And she's like, something is weird about you, but I can't put my finger on what. And I'm happy that you're letting me stay with my boyfriend, so I'm just gonna accept that this is normal. He's never gonna see you again. Except that he is, kind of, because it's gonna be fine.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Now he doesn't have to leave because Javert is dead.
But, I mean, you sort of wonder if, like, any other cops are going to care about him, but maybe not.
I don't think so. I think this was just a one man's vendetta.
One man's vendetta. I do love the scene when he goes to the court and he tries to turn himself in, and they're like, you're a rich, good guy. We know you. You can't turn yourself for yeah. this crime.
And it's great that he proves it by being like, I know all these things yeah. about these prisoners. So,
yep.
How would I know that?
How would I know that? I'm the guy.
No, it is sad because she's the only good thing he's ever had in his life. And he's like, I gotta let her go. Life is not about taking. It's about giving.
It's about giving. I really love the relationship with the priest and how
that, priest is
that
so
guy
nice.
Changes his life. It's really, really sweet. And I love when he's there and all of the people that work at the wherever they are don't want to let him in because they're like, he could be dangerous. But the priest is like, no, it's fine. And he says to the priest, how do you know I won't murder you in the night? And the priest says, well, how do you know I won't murder you?
I did love that also.
Fair enough, buddy.
Too true, man.
He's got you there.
Good point.
Yeah. It's good. It's a really good story.
I think it's solid.
Mm-hmm.
And again, unfortunately,
still so relevant.
Relevant story.
Still
for our
so
time.
Relevant.
Damn, could we solve any of our problems?
Just I don't one? Think we have solved any of our problems yet. We've
just
created
one
new
problem.
We fixed the hole in the ozone layer.
We did.
That's the only problem we as a society that we've ever solved.
Oh, God. Oh, boy. Okay.
Yep.
So I think this is an interesting final matchup, right? We have Les Miserables. It's a classic story. It's intense. Mm-hmm. It's serious. Mm-hmm. And then we have Top Hat, which is just
not serious.
Fun. But it's maybe the best Astaire and Rogers. I don't know. I'd love to watch the rest of them to yeah. really judge, but yeah. you know.
It's certainly a prime version of it succeeding exactly at what it's trying to do. I think it's a yes. very successful film.
Another thing I'll point out, which I think has never happened before, we've ended up with two nominees in our final.
That's shocking. We always ditch the nominees. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
I'm pretty happy about that. Good job, Academy. I mean, they did nominate basically every movie that came out that year, to be fair, so.
It was a wider spread of the opportunity to get things right, but still
We've
worth noting.
Also, interestingly, ended up with our number one seed and our number 14 seed, so like almost the bottom seed as the two.
Oh, I don't know. Where do you have a, are you leaning after this discussion one way or the other?
They're both really good. I guess I don't really want to fall into the trap of what an Oscar movie should be. Because I feel like you end up in this place where you're like, well, Les Mis, it's like very serious and great serious performances. And that's sort of what the Oscars do, right? When I don't feel like we need to be beholden to that. I think if we're like Top Hat is a more perfect version of Top Hat than Les Mis is of Les Mis, I think we should pick Top Hat. But I'm very happy with both of them. I think they're both great. I will say Les Mis made me cry. Sometimes we place value on that.
It's true. Although, I mean, Top Hat is not going.
It's not trying to make tears. You cry is the thing.
It really isn't. If Top Hat made you cry, you'd be like, what?
Yeah, I'd be like, I think something's gone wrong here. I'm crying at Top Hat. Wrong.
I think this is me.
Yeah, something's broken inside.
Yeah. I have the same thought of like, yes, I think there is the trap of, well, it's serious and it's saying something. And so that makes it more important and more Oscars.
I do like a movie that's saying something just as like a me thing and not an Oscars thing, though.
Yes.
I love a message movie.
But do you want Astaire and Rogers to have a best picture under their belt? I don't know if there are any other
That's a good question. Just for society's sake, shouldn't we recognize the value of Astaire and Rogers?
Just to get the spread across all the years, you know?
Yeah.
There's so many serious pictures that have a lot to say about the world.
That's the thing. And when you get a perfectly executed comedy, aren't we always saying, are we not always saying that the Oscars should recognize comedies more?
We are. And it's a type of movie that we're never going to see recognized again. There's never going to be this type of dance movie.
It's true. And I think the balance, the fact that we watched multiple dance movies this year, and we have watched many dance movies over the course of this, right? I think it's very hard to strike the right balance. They often end up just fading into these 10, 15 minute dance sequences where you're like, we've completely lost the plot, as it were, right? Like, where's the movie? And I don't feel like this movie does that. I think this is a really, really well executed. The story continues the whole way through. The dance elevates the characters. I really think that gazebo scene works as a, like, you buy that they've fallen in love with each other because of this dance, which is very, very hard to sell, right? I think it's really good. I feel like I'm leaning top hat now. I'm talking myself into it.
Me too. We talked when we did Modern Times, which I think we gave that year to Modern Times. Let's honor a chaplain.
Like, why not?
We should do it.
Yeah.
Let's honor an Astaire and Rogers.
Hell yeah.
We should do it.
We should do it. If ever there's a place where we have the power to do so, it is on our own podcast. So,
God knows. So we really liked the Les Miserables. It's a really good adaptation. Great performances.
It's one of my favorite literary adaptations that we've watched on this podcast, oh, yeah. I think. It's great. And part of that is the strength of the material, but it doesn't let the material down. It's really good.
It's really good. And it didn't have any of those pacing or structural issues we've seen with so many of the other films this year. They figured out how to adapt it and keep the story moving.
Which is impressive because I think it's an incredibly long book. And I don't know if the book is just well paced. And so they were like, they just kept the pace of the book. I don't know if that's the case or if it's the filmmakers that made it happen. But it's really good. You're driven through the plot the whole time. You're never like, God, we're languishing here in this. Like, why are we here so long?
And I don't know, the musical closely follows this adaptation, right? So I don't know if there's a previous adaptation that this is building on or these writers really figured out, like, how do we adapt this 1,000-page book into shorter story? That's an interesting question. But I think we go top hat. I think we honor Astaire and Rogers. I think we kick Swing Time out of here.
Swing Time, you're gone. You're replaced with top hat.
Yeah. And we just have a good time.
Hell yeah. I like to have a good time. We can be reminded about, you know, the horrible structural problems with the prison system any day. That's always going to be there.
And I think we gave The Wind Dime a Fugitive from a Chain Gang, right, that year. So we've given it
a great movie.
Prison commentary picture.
Yep.
We're not dissing prison commentary.
We love prison commentary. And we love union movies.
Yeah. Unions.
But we also apparently love dance just as much. So we've ended up with two dance movies.
I really like it.
And two message movies. I love tap dancing too, and it doesn't get any better than Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. So what are you going to do? Give them the win. That's what you're going to do.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So what should have won? We just said top hat. Did the Oscars get it wrong? Yes. Although we didn't hate Mutiny on the Bounty.
Yeah. I think that's a worthy winner. I get why it won. I think parts of it are very successful.
I mean, the boat stuff is impressive. They're on some kind of water.
It's great. It's very well shot. It's very well acted. The main issues are, for some reason, people in the 30s are obsessed with the British Empire in a weird way.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the downfall.
Some slight pacing problems.
Yeah.
Some slight structure pacing problems.
But if you've got Lawton in your movie, it's probably pretty good this year, you know?
It's a pro Lawton podcast.
I had no idea I would become such a big Lawton fan, having started with his Henry VIII.
Private Life of Henry VIII.
Though he was my favorite thing about that movie.
Yeah. And he's your favorite Henry VIII to date.
That's true. Okay. So.
Wait, hold on. Is his Javert your favorite of his roles this year? Which Lawton do you like best?
Ooh, good question. I mean, I think probably just because Javert is the best character. Like, it's such a well-structured character. I think his Bly is great, and he's, like, a very convincing son of a bitch. Like, he's so good as Bly. But I just think there are such layers to Javert that are more interesting to play. And so then you get him reckoning, his face of reckoning at the end when he's figuring out, like, I don't think I can bring this guy to jail, but if I don't bring this guy to jail, I'll never be able to live with myself. So I think I think Javert is his best, but his Bly is great.
I agree with that. I guess Ruggles is coming in third.
His Ruggles is fine, but that movie is all over the place. It's a very silly movie.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Are we taking a trip? Are we walking down the lane to Jake Gyllenhaal Corner?
You know it.
So obviously, he wasn't alive. But I will say we have a million dude characters in these movies to choose from. So is there anyone we would like him to replace? I will say there are many movies with performances that we loved, so he will not be replacing those people.
As we sometimes say, I think if we remade Black Fury and could actually criticize the coal company, and like, there probably should be more movies about the way that companies were structured in this time period and how they took advantage of workers, Jake could play that role.
I think I want to say if we remade any Muni movie, Jake would be a good Muni.
You think he's kind of a Muni type?
He's a bit of a Paul Muni type. So yeah, I agree. A remake of Black Fury would be great with him in it. And a remake of I'm a Fugitive from a Chain Gang would be great with him in it.
All right. Well, okay. But we're probably not replacing Paul.
How do you feel, since you didn't like the guy who played Lysander, how do you feel about him in Midsummer Night's Dream?
Sure.
Why not? He could do Shakespeare.
Yeah, I don't know. Have we ever seen him do Shakespeare? No. But he could.
He may have done it. I know he's done stage stuff. I don't know what he's done on stage, but I haven't seen it.
Okay, let's run through. Top Hat? No. Naughty Marietta? Nah. Captain Blood? I'd like to see him as a pirate.
I would love him as a pirate. I want to put that out into the universe. Could we get a Jake Gyllenhaal pirate thing? I feel like pirates are kind of in the zeitgeist right now.
God, if he had shown up in Our Flag Means Death.
Oh, man. What a bummer that show ended before he could have a role. He would have been great. Black Fury, only if it was a remake. I wouldn't take Muni out.
Mm-hmm.
Ruggles.
I don't think there's any space
for him. I don't think he belongs in Ruggles.
Ruggles.
He would be great in Les Mis, but I wouldn't take out either of the guys from this.
No.
I'm not putting him anywhere near Lives of a Bengal Lancer.
No.
I mean, he could be the jerk guy from Broadway Melody, but why would I want him to be?
I don't think that saves that character.
No. Well, a young version of him would have been a more interesting adult David Copperfield.
That's true.
Because that guy was just kind of a blank slate.
Yeah. Really got outshone by little Freddie Bartholomew.
That guy's so good.
Yeah. Bride of Frankenstein? No. Alice Adams? The Fred McMurray character? I don't think Fred McMurray is
kind of boring.
Night at the Opera? No. The Informer?
I think we might have... Maybe we just talked about this in our own time. I think he'd be good as the main Informer guy, but I don't think it saves the movie because the performance is not the problem with the Informer. It's the structure.
Right, right. Mutiny on the Bounty.
I mean, there's a million sailors. He could be one of the sailors. I also think he could be the Clark Gable role. I don't think that Clark Gable's doing anything that special in that movie.
No, I agree. 39 Steps, he could be fine. We talked briefly. I don't know. I mean, Errol Flynn is good in Captain Blood. I don't know if he's, like, blowing me out of the water.
That's another one where I really don't think the performance is the problem with that movie, though. It's, like, it's the white slavery.
You don't want to see a movie where Jake gets sold into white slavery?
I don't think so.
All right, well, maybe let's replace Clark Gable. He doesn't need it.
No, Gable doesn't need that. Gable's got his iconic roles. We're not taking anything away from him if we take him out of Muni on the Bounty. Okay.
All right, great.
Sure.
Great, Jake.
Why not? All righty, then.
If this were a 5-nominee year, what would be our top 5?
Top Hat. Les Mis. I might keep Black Fury because I just love
I think I would keep Black Fury movie. Also.
A Night at the Opera?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then a fifth.
Maybe Muni on the Bounty.
Oh, yeah. Why not? I'll keep Muni on the Bounty.
Yeah, something in there.
Something like
Although,
that.
Although, you know, I did like 39 Steps quite a bit.
It's fun. I think Night at the Opera is like kind of a... Some kind of fun thing goes in that slot. 39 Steps, maybe. Something like that. All right.
Which of these movies, if any, do you see yourself coming back to?
I'd rewatch Top Hat any day.
Sure.
I mean, I'd probably show... Like, I would advise someone to watch... Les Mis or Black Fury, but I don't know that I'm like running out to rewatch either of those right now. I don't know. I mean, it would never just be on, but there are parts of Naughty Marietta that I would rewatch.
You really enjoyed that.
I did. I liked their chemistry, I think, which is always a delight to me. But mostly Top Hat, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Mostly Top Hat. If it were on, I'd rewatch 39 Steps.
I'd rewatch anything from the Handcuffed Together part, for sure.
Yeah, that part's great. Yeah, I think the Les Miserables I would recommend to people. And again, once I get out of this podcast and need to put things in my Paul Muni rotation, I could come back to Black Fury.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not a bad year. It's not a great year. It's an okay year. They're figuring it out. They're finding out how to work within the code.
It's tough. They got all these new restrictions and they're like, we can't criticize any authority.
No.
Tell a story.
Stories are kind of about criticizing authority, if we're being honest, but let's just pretend that that's
and
fine.
And then in a couple years, they figure, we've figured out how to write screwball comedies. Let's just do that.
What we need is more Top Hat vibes, whether or not there's dancing. Yeah. We want funny comedies. Mm-hmm. So, have we learned anything? Mutiny on the Bounty, I think, feels like a pretty Oscar-y movie.
Yeah. I just think this is a weird year where they were panicking.
Yeah. I don't think you're wrong. I think that's definitely an element of this. But yeah, I don't think we've learned anything revelatory. Shocking. Checking in with our patterns. Do we have any angry white guys? Obviously, this is like very much predates our Travis Bickle.
No, no Travis Bickles. A lot of bad dudes. Sly's a pretty bad dude.
Yeah, there's villains.
Not a cool guy.
That guy sucks. That's the probably the worst guy of the year. Bly's the number one bad guy.
Should we start awarding worst guy of the year?
Yes, can we add worst guy of the year? If there is a Travis Bickle, we'll talk about that. But if not,
yeah.
Worst guy of the
year. Just award worst guy of the year. Because, yeah, it's got to be Bly, right?
That guy sucks.
On a much, much, much lower level, that rich dick from Ruggles.
Yeah, I hated that guy too, but he didn't have anybody keel hauled, so...
Well, he doesn't have nearly as much power, so...
He probably would have had someone keel hauled if he was the captain of a ship.
It's true.
That guy was awful.
I mean, all the guys in the Lives of a Bengal Lancer are just terrible by situation.
Yeah, but they weren't like...
Not as individually
bad people,
terrible.
Really. They weren't there trying to be bad. They were just like, you guys shouldn't be here, and you don't realize that you shouldn't be here.
Right. No, it's definitely Bly. Worst guy of the year. Let's Excellent. Add that. If no Travis Bickles were warning, worst guy of the year.
Yep. Okay. And then shockingly, despite everything being very formulaic in terms of its source material this year, we have no biopics.
Yeah.
I'm stunned.
You would think that would come out in people panicking, but they didn't do it.
Yeah. Now, the closest we come to an original idea is Broadway Melody of 1936, which there's an earlier Broadway Melody movie, but the plot is completely unrelated. So it just has the title in common. Everything else is based on a book or a play or an operetta.
In the case of Naughty Marietta. I guess it's time to rank the best picture.
Very exciting times. Mutiny on the Bounty. Where does it fit in? Well, indeed.
Looking at the list.
Yeah. Anything sticking out to you?
I feel like Mutiny on the Bounty was a mix, right? It was some good things, some not great things.
Yeah.
I feel like where we're starting it to get into mixed territory on our list is like From Here to Eternity, somewhere around like the 18 mark.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And that is indeed quite mixed, From Here to Eternity.
Are the highs higher?
I mean, I liked the highs. Lawton's very good. I might think the highs are higher than From Here to Eternity.
Lawton over Clift.
Clift was great, too. But I think that even though it was a little bit repetitive, there was more stuff in general that I liked about Mutiny on the Bounty. And then there were things in From Here to Eternity where I was like, this could have been so much better than it was.
Do you feel like that's an appropriate place on the list? Or would you slot it higher?
Well, I like it more than No Country for Old Men, but obviously that's its own issue.
What about Birdman?
Birdman is also uneven in places. It has some high highs. I think it's definitely below The King's Speech. What a charming film The King's Speech is.
Yes.
So.
I feel like once we get to 15 and up, it's solid throughout, but not spectacular.
That's sort of the middle section of the list is like, it's quite pleasant the whole way through. Is it the best movie you've ever seen? No. But will you enjoy it? Absolutely. Sure. So yeah, I mean, I guess I leave the No Country for Old Men question up to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy with it anywhere in the 16 to 18 range.
All right. So it's either... I certainly like No Country for Old Men better than Mutiny on the Bounty. So maybe the compromise is to make it our new number 18.
Works for me.
Okay. New 18. Mutiny on the Bounty. Lawton, you're on the list.
Lawton. Come on, baby. Lawton. Love ya. So what are we talking about next time?
Next time, we're talking about the 51st Academy Awards, or the films of 1978. The nominees were Coming Home, The Deer Hunter, Heaven Can Wait, Midnight Express, and An Unmarried Woman.
My, my, my. Have you seen any of these films before?
Nope. You?
Nor have I. Lots of Vietnam stuff. Should be depressing.
Yeah, can't wait.
In the meantime, if you have comments, questions, or concerns, reach out to us at oscarswrongpod@gmail.com. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at oscarswrongpod, and our website is oscarswrongpod.com. If you're enjoying the podcast, please tell a friend, leave a review, and subscribe. New episodes come out every other Friday at 6 o'clock Eastern, wherever you get your podcasts.